is visiting one of Chicago's finest tomorrow morning, and that's kind of the pace that I find myself, very unusual for that. I'm going to try to provide a context of the sort of things that I think about. These are the things that I've been thinking about as the president of the Chicago Community Trust, and they map extremely well onto my role heading up the Chicago Public Schools for that. And where my bias is coming from is that it is essential that we forge strong partnerships between higher ed and our pre-K-12 systems. And so hopefully I'm just adding wind to your sails in this process. But some context globally, I believe that we are on the threshold of an era of massive change as a society for that, and you start to pick it up in documents such as, this is from J. Walker Smith of Monitor, and he was, and then the Futures Company, talking about from a consumer perspective, we are entering an era of consequences. Consumers are making decisions with very different information and a sense of scarcity, vigilance, prioritization for their decisions. McKinsey has created a document called Shaping the Future with five main trends in that are transformative, a great rebalancing of our globe, this relentless productivity imperative, and there are a number of sectors that have not felt this yet. For instance, one of the members of the Fed board with me is the head of USG, the gypsum manufacturer, and the amount of productivity that they have squeezed out of their company, even during the decline when the housing market is frozen and there's no construction, it's extraordinary. In education, we haven't felt the same direct need as directly as they have. The whole move towards pricing the resources of the planet that become increasingly scarce, recognizing that we are in a global competitive market, and then the power of the internet and the global grid for that. And then looking at work of IBM as far as rethinking the values of leadership, in terms of creativity, dexterity, and relationships being essential for that, and moving full front into a sustainability paradigm where we are looking at maximizing the social, environmental, and economic costs. And I was fortunate to be part of a conference this summer that focused directly on that from the role of fiduciaries of large pension funds and investments, and recognizing when you factor in something like the true costs of the operations for a global company like BP, with their safety record needs to be included in an assessment of their stock prices. We'll see much more of that there. So this journey begins with looking at the G7, which between 1965 and 2002 generated 67% of the world's GDP, roughly 1 billion people consuming 80% of the world's resources. What has changed is the pressure to go to the G20 for that, and then in particular the BRIC companies, countries, we could call them companies, I guess, but the BRIC countries have emerged as economic powerhouses. And so particularly China and India in their work, and even within the past 5 years, the share of GDP has shifted dramatically in favor of the BRIC countries versus the United States, and just projected that by 2050, China and India will account for 50% of the global product there. During the same period between now and 2050, the world's population will increase to 9 billion people, but only 100 million of that increase will be found in the G7 countries. That's 8 billion people in the developing countries for that, and two-thirds of the world's middle class will be found in developing countries for that. So it's a very different scenario that we have. And even though our nation's standard of living will rise to around $100,000 per capita. China and India will see increases to $30,000 or $40,000, but times 3 or 4 billion people, that represents a very large number. At the other end of the spectrum, however, we'll see 2 billion Africans living in poverty during this era. The competition is much more defined by cities and metropolitan regions, and that growth is clearly in the East and Southern Hemisphere for this time being. So I know that UIC partnered with Brookings in hosting a Metropolitan Global Economic Summit here in December. This is supported in large part by the Brookings Institution that has a economic development strategy based upon the growth of metros and looking at this formula, the next economy being defined by innovation, low carbon economy and exports in an opportunity rich environment. That is what the University of Illinois provides, is that opportunity rich. It provides the innovation and insights into shifting to a low carbon economy. It provides the research base for the innovations and the translation into the commercialization of that to drive the exports. You are clearly at the center of our economic resurgence here. In looking at that vision, the vision of the future, and this is something that I have to prepare the Chicago Public School students for, it's a high-tech economy, it's a green economy, it's a digital economy, and it's a smart economy. Very different type of future than where we're currently living. An example being that simply the green jobs alone across the country are expected to be over 2 million in number, an enormous employment engine. Where does Illinois stand in this? Are we left behind? Are we middle of the pack? Are we leading the charge? How do we leverage the economic engine of metropolitan Chicago for this work? At a point where we are losing our competitive edge, all of you know the stats for higher education and the production of advanced degrees, particularly math science areas. And you know about the achievement gap, but the mismatch between the growth in jobs and the requirement for higher ed degrees at the same time that African Americans and Latinos who will populate the workforce in the next 20 or 30 years are not achieving at those levels. And then we see the international competition that we have. These are slides from the OECD, which show very clearly in just a span of 10, 11 years, the United States was the leading producer of graduate students. And now, 11 years later in 06, and the picture has only gotten worse since then, we have been surpassed by a number of countries for that. And then locally, we have CEOs for City that has demonstrated the economic value to more advanced education attainment for our students, both high school completion and post-secondary education, leading to impacts on employment rates and wage rates for that. Now I want to focus on the challenge with our pre-K system. Pre-K-12 system, and my journey goes back to A Nation at Risk. There are probably a number of you here who remember that very clearly, 1983. For that, very interesting statements, because I went back and reread that when I was asked to lead the Chicago Public Schools, and even then they were talking about, you know, others surpassing our education attainments, the notion of educational disarmament, and the sense that history is not kind to idlers. They captured the concept of a global village at that period of time, and the shift away from needing to prepare only a few to the highest levels of educational attainment, to the fact that now virtually everybody needs some level of post-secondary education for that. They were cognizant of the information age, but if you think about in 83, I think only those of you in academia were really engaged with the internet at that time. And try to picture the computer you were using in 83. I was using a little K-Pro, and it had a little 4-inch screen, and it was just the greatest invention in the world for word processing for that. So, and this goes beyond simply our economic competitiveness, as we have seen the strains within our social fabric, the notion that a strong education system is an imperative for a free and democratic society, understanding both our own culture and pluralism and the individual freedoms, as well as other countries around the country. And then that classic quote from Thomas Jefferson, you know, that if you don't trust people, it's not to take away their freedoms, but to inform their discretion. So in my journey, we've had a succession of tries of outsiders trying to change the schools. This was, you know, David Kearns of Xerox, coming in, Fortune Magazine, 1990s, corporations saving our schools. So we've had that. Cap'n Journal talking about the canary in the coal mine, which was the achievement gap back in 98, repetitive stories that continue. Oops, too fast. Okay, so how I've started to try to make the case for where I think we're at now is that starting with a nation at risk has put increasing pressure on improving the quality of our public schools that ultimately led to the work in No Child Left Behind. And that focus, which to me, to my mind, has dramatically narrowed the focus to a set of a few key indicators of reading and math in particular, but unfortunately it has some unintended consequences. And that is the notion, if we were automobile makers, and Ford or GM, and we decided the most important feature of a car was that it had wheels so it could roll off the assembly line, and that was the one thing that we measured, then we would end up producing cars that look like this coming off our assembly line for that, or perhaps this stylish model. And I'm afraid, as I look at what's happened in the Chicago public schools over the last decade, that has indeed happened. There's been a dramatic narrowing of the curriculum and abandonment of areas such as civics and social studies, physical education even, and we wonder why we have an increasing obesity rate as a country, why we have poor health outcomes, and why the life expectancy of this next generation is less than our current generation. There are a number of issues. The other challenge is that as much as business would like to come in and save our schools, that there are no silver bullets for education. And so framing a series of opportunities for the Chicago Public Schools, first of all, we need to recapture world-class standards and recognize that we are in an arena of international competition for this. To get everybody to a college level readiness, for instance, looks at something like calculus at the 12th grade. Granted, not every child can master that because of a variety of reasons, but that is a world-class standard to get to. It's not a standardized test to do that, but it's a series of conceptual understandings and performances to be able to master calculus at 12th grade. To do that, you've got to have algebra at 8th grade, and to do that, that means that you have to start teaching algebraic concepts as early as preschool in this. And so starting with those standards recalibrates the rest of the system. And then I think we need to broaden out our vision for what success looks like. And I look in terms of we want to produce powerful thinkers who are able to analyze, synthesize, critically think about the information they're receiving, their judgment. We recognize that with the internet, students have access to an enormously greater amount of information than ever before in human history, and the types of skills young people need for that is very different. They need to be responsible global citizens, particularly in a city like Chicago that is global. That's why the Mandarin programs in the Chicago public schools are so extraordinary, and Mayor Daley's vision and insight into that being important. That's why they're going to Walter Payton High School. That's the home of the Confucius Institute and the largest Mandarin language program in the city. And Chicago has the largest Mandarin program in the country. It's that sort of recognition of us as global citizens, but it also goes to our notion of ecological stewardship.